Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Welcome into Soccer Morning here on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Thank you very much for partaking in the program today. We are live and on the air, and I want to talk about soccer because what else are you going to do? Especially with everything happening in the world of the U.S. men's national team, it is all turmoil and drama and nonsense, and some of it is just makes you want to pull your hair out. Some of it just makes you want to not quit on the team. I don't know. I mean, if we were going to take a poll, we asked 100 people what your DEFCON on the United States men's national team was. And if you don't know what DEFCON is, it's a defense condition thing. It's a real life thing they use to, the U.S. military uses to declare where our defense condition is. It's self-explanatory that way. But also prominently features in the movie War Games. DEFCON 1 is all out. We are going for it. We're at war. DEFCON 1 is the worst, okay? DEFCON 1 is all of the alarms are going off. And for our purposes here, for the U.S. men's national team, all alarms are going off if we're at DEFCON 1. It goes down to DEFCON 5. DEFCON 5 is everything's great. It's cool. There's no alarms. We can all chill out, relax, have a drink and a smoke, and just be people. Where are we on that? If we asked 100 people, I think we'd get a lot of DEFCON 1s right now. Kyle on Twitter says DEFCON 2. That's as close as you can get without everything, all the klaxons. That leads us into the news today. And by the way, there's a game tonight. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk to you guys, get plenty of phone calls on the air. Tweets at Soccer Morning. Hit us up there with your DEFCON. We have news. I'm going to start with the U.S. men's national team and what happened yesterday. Jurgen Klinsmann, ahead of that match with Costa Rica tonight at Red Bull Arena, holding a press conference, chooses to use said press conference to call out one of his players. Speaking a day before the U.S. plays Costa Rica in an exhibition, Klinsmann said, "I had a very severe word with Fabian Johnson, and I sent him home today. He can rethink his approach about his team." Now, apparently, Johnson begged off in extra time against Mexico. With the game on the line, Fabian Johnson, having trouble in the heat of Pasadena, decided he needed to come off the field. This upset Jurgen Klinsmann in part because Jurgen Klinsmann was holding back one of his substitutions so he could put Nick Raimondo on for penalties. First of all, that's a ridiculous idea. I mean, not because Nick Raimondo's not great at penalties, but to hold back a substitution in extra time in a game you're not guaranteed to be tied after 120 minutes anyway. Fabian Johnson begging off, that's a different issue. The choice by Jurgen Klinsmann to put it out into the public and shame one of his best players, I don't know about that one. In other news, David Beckham has told the Daily Star of England, which I was barely aware was a thing, that he expects to have an announcement on a stadium site for his Miami franchise in about 6 weeks, or within 6 weeks, and that he hopes to start play in 2018. Considering we don't have a stadium site, considering they don't have a name or a staff or academies or any players, of course, that comes later, I guess, but they don't have anything else, this team exists not at all, that's a pretty aggressive timeline. Your quote, our aim is 2018, but trying to build a team is something I've dreamed of since being a kid, blah, blah, blah. There have been a few speed bumps along the way, but I believe we are closer now than we've ever been. So hopefully in the next 6 weeks, we'll be able to announce the site of the stadium plans, and then we'll move on. It's really exciting. He's talking about the name. He's crushed our dreams. I actually heard Miami Vice the other day. It's not going to be that. Miami Reds? I also heard Miami United the other day, but we'll see. Please not Miami United. Please, David. I beg of you. No Miami United. European qualifiers, that's all happening right now. Russia, Slovakia have been added to the field for Euro 2016. After qualifying yesterday, Russia beating Montenegro 2-0 in Moscow. Fourth straight European championships for Russia. Slovakia finishes second in Group C with a 4-2 win over Luxembourg. This is the first time Slovakia has participated as an independent nation in the European championships. We got other results from yesterday, including Austria beating Liechtenstein 3-0, Sweden beating Moldova 2-0, Spain beating Ukraine 1-0 to finish top of their group. That's away to Ukraine. England staying perfect with a 3-0 win over Lithuania. That's how they finish out their qualifying campaign. 10 wins, 10 games, 30 points, plus 28 goal differential. Now, let's keep in mind that Group E, England's group, was made up of Switzerland, Slovenia, Estonia, Lithuania, and San Marino. Not exactly a murderer's row, but give England plenty of credit for navigating their group with a perfect record. The playoff draw, we've got games left. The playoff draw from all of those third-place teams for the playoffs will take place on Sunday. So we'll find out who plays who in the playoffs. But business to be done, games today. Incredibly important game, Netherlands hosting the Czech Republic. They have their qualification on the line. The Netherlands, the Dutch have to beat Czech Republic and hope that Iceland upends Turkey in Turkey in order for the Dutch to take over third place in their group and get into the playoffs. That's the only hope the Netherlands has. They're 2 points back of Turkey right now in Group A. Iceland has already qualified, and the Czechs have already qualified. It's a matter of whether or not Turkey or the Dutch finish in third place. Also on the schedule today, Belgium, Israel, Cyprus, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Wales, Andorra, Bulgaria, Azerbaijan, Italy, Norway, Malta, Croatia. Not exactly rich with games outside of that Dutch-Czech Republic game. And finally, Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini have told investigators that the payment to Michel Platini that has sparked their suspension, 90 days each, provisional suspension, is based on a oral agreement between the two that goes back to Michel Platini working for FIFA from 1998 to 2002. According to the contract was for Platini to be paid 300,000 Swiss francs per year for his job. He claims an additional 500,000 Swiss francs per year was to be deferred. The Frenchman received a 1.05 million Swiss francs for 3.5 years of work. Platini, who was also FIFA vice president under Blatter until he was suspended Thursday, said 2 weeks ago he's not paid the totality of my salary because FIFA's financial situation at the time. So they're claiming that FIFA didn't have the money, that they waited 9 years for him to be paid, and this is all based on an oral agreement. Swiss law requires him to call in that debt within 5 years. So there you go. All right, so we've set the table. We've got USA Costa Rica if you want to talk about that. European qualifiers, the Dutch. Jurgen Klinsmann calling out Fabian Johnson. That's going to be top of mind. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. Your calls next. Facing the crowd. You're talking too loud.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning on a Tuesday. It is game day for the U.S. men's national team, and yet I feel as though nobody cares. Nobody cares. Does anybody care? What is attendance going to be like at Red Bull Arena tonight? I imagine there'll be a lot of Costa Rica fans. Good for them. A lot of expats, a lot of people who have moved from Costa Rica to the United States or are of Costa Rican origin, their families. That's great. Good for them. But who else is going to be there? Are there going to be U.S. national team fans there, like actually cheering and happy and ready to be excited about watching their team play? I mean, this is, talk about a lame duck game that has zero energy behind it from an American perspective. Zero. What could you possibly take away from this game? What could you possibly... Aaron's in Jersey. I don't know where in Jersey, Aaron, but are you going to this game?
Inglewood, yes. I'm definitely going to the game.
Okay. All right, good for
I
you.
I like Costa Rican style, and I like where we are, because everyone doesn't like where we are.
Oh.
And so I tend to be a little contrarian. And also, you know, if you look at national team histories for, you know, dozens of other teams in the world, if you don't try out new things the year after a World Cup, you know, in a World Cup cycle, when do you try things out?
Okay.
And if you look at the what happened to Germany and Italy in the 90s and 2000s, when they delayed this effort just to get results, play their oldest players, you know, kind of max out the legacy system, they crashed and burned and dealt with not 4-year cycles, but 8 and 12 year cycles to get back on top.
But Aaron,
and they had to gut their whole systems.
Do you think that there has been anything approaching a coherent plan on the part of Jurgen Klinsmann over the past year to get to that place? To try.
I mean,
there have been new faces, sure, but there hasn't been any consistency, right? So, I mean, go ahead.
I mean, I guess I would say, you know, I've had this debate with a lot of friends of mine over the years about an American style, and I mean, the American style is this, you know, kind of chaotic model. It's like saying, has there been any consistency in our politics and in our infrastructure and in business? I mean, if you look at kind of every industrial nature of who we are, you know, we are not this kind of, you know, sequentially organized society, and you're never going to get these kind of clean resets. And I think the truth is until Galati changes, and I'm sure when that happens too, eventually a Klinsmann or someone like that would change. Until you kind of get a reformation institutionally, you're never going to get a clean reset. And I'm not simplifying and dumping it all on top of him either, because I don't think it's that simple. I think where we are is we've evolved from starting soccer back up 25 years ago, because that's what really happened. We started back up in late 80s when we kind of like said, oh yeah, soccer again. And then we're now kind of at this eventual point where we now have to become kind of professional at this, like everyone else is professional. And we have a lot of these kind of baggages, some in MLS, and I call them the double G's because I'm a big boxing fan, so triple G's fighting. So Garber and Angelotti are my double G. And, you know, it's like we're stuck with all these kind of vestiges of what got us here, and we just have to kind of, to be blunt, flush them out of the system in the next probably 5 years. And then we'll be able to really build on what that next generation of leadership is. And between now and then, we just have to kind of pound out what we can. And I know that's not a beautiful answer, but I think it's the only one we're going to get.
It's just,
you could bring Sir Alex tomorrow. And you know what?
Okay.
I don't know if you get any better results.
Okay, well, Alex is... his expertise is in running a club. This is a different thing. I admit to that. I'm not saying that this isn't a difficult...
You could bring Pep, Sir Alex, you know, Jose Mourinho, Sachi. You could bring the top 10 greatest managers in the last 15, 20, 30 years. I don't know if you'd get a better result.
Aaron, I get what you're saying. I really do. I understand the logic that has brought you to that place. The problem, I think, for me... is that this is truly a blind leap of faith. And because of that, it's incredibly scary because there's no guarantees that anything Klinsmann is doing is going to work. And because he is seemingly incapable of saying anything that gives us reason to believe he knows what he's doing, there is a lot of doubt right now. That I think that's fair.
But let me ask you this real quick question here. You know, we kind of throw back to Bruce Arena, you know, this kind of like, you know, the magic man phase. Now he was able to bury all these institutional problems because he's a man from the institution. So we were able to get kind of results during his era. But did we actually deal with any of the institutional problems, which just keep manifesting themselves generationally?
Sure, but how is Klinsmann?
And no one calls him on that.
Aaron, but that wasn't his job. His job was to win games. I know Klinsmann got the technical director tag, and therefore he has a different set of responsibilities. Again, I think that runs counter to being the head coach of the national team in a lot of ways. But what is Klinsmann doing that is addressing those institutions? Again, my contention is that one man can't do this, that this is a much...
Exactly.
Fine, you don't want to blame Klinsmann for not making progress on an institutional basis, then why did you give him all of this control, imbue him with all of this savior type of a personality.
Because it's actually a highlight something. If Klinsmann can fail here, and I'm not suggesting Klinsmann's the greatest manager ever and the greatest everything, but he is a European and or an international high quality piece of soccer technology. Let's like if we pretend he's a product, that's what he is. Uh-huh. And so if he can just catastrophically fail, then it forces everybody to let the look at themselves at some point. And what I would argue is this kind of at a real fundamental level is that, well, one guy can't fix everything. One guy could highlight a lot of what's wrong. And one of the things that is wrong is that CONCACAF is kind of this invention for Mexico and the U.S. to kind of really get a path to the World Cup. If we had to qualify, if Mexico and the U.S. had to qualify in South America, you know, so let's pretend they extended South America all the way through the Americas, but then only had five or six slots. Both of us wouldn't qualify.
Sure. Aaron. But what do you mean? It's a geographically based. Look, it's not the U.S. fault. U.S.'s fault that it's in North America. It's not Mexico's fault. They're in North America, and that their region is weak.
If you look at what FIFA, if you look at the grand bargain in FIFA for the creation of CONCACAF in really the 80s and 90s, it was a method to bring U.S. into world football. Because everyone realized the U.S. was this anomaly, just the way we realize kind of China is right now, that is kind of out of world football. And India will be next in another 20 years. And these big markets, we don't want to leave off. And so the problem we have is we get this kind of free pass to the World Cup without earning much. It's almost like the NFC West was 15 years ago in football. It was just kind of a joke. I mean, it was like one team, the Rams, played football and the rest just kind of just shot themselves every week. And so it gave this kind of artificial, you know, strength of capability that
yes,
when you
yes,
can
but
anything
okay.
real,
you're
you
right.
fold.
But Aaron, okay. Well, I don't disagree with that assertion that the U.S. has essentially had a pass to the World Cup for the past 25 years, every World Cup between 1990 and now, and even not, well, 90 maybe was a lot tougher than now.
The
problem we have a chicken and egg. This is a theme that runs through American soccer. We have a chicken and egg problem. If the United States was not able to qualify relatively easily for every World Cup since 1998, let's throw that one as the first real one, then would soccer's popularity be where it is? Would the infrastructure exist? Would U.S. soccer have the money to even have thrown a little bit at a program that is yet to reach any significant level? You know what I mean? So
what I argue is that we have actually more money than 90% of the country, but in the way we industrialize that money, we fragment it so
sure,
people
but,
in the process can
but,
make money.
Okay, but
so
that,
that
but that's
you look
that's
the real
an existing
dollars,
structure. That's an existing structure.
Billion.
That's an existing structure that predates what you said. You know, taking this thing seriously, restarting soccer.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, because if you look at the deal MLS and some have, they don't have any financial responsibility in the development of football in the United States. And if you look at, and I'll take, and Germany's kind of a red herring, but let's say Belgium is a great example, right? Belgium is basically like Connecticut. And Belgium produced a golden generation of which we don't have one player that's remotely, I mean, Tim Howard. Tim Howard is the only player that could challenge. He would back up Courtois, basically, challenge to be on the Belgian national team. And they were horrible in the 90s. I mean, they didn't qualify for Euro. They didn't qualify for anything. But what they did is they reformed themselves and they started. And they had the same problems we did. They had a weird, funky, lame league with a bunch of weirdos, you know, running them like real estate and car dealer guys like we have, you know, and who don't care about development of anything. And they basically just piece by piece forced institutional changes. And one of the best things they did, and it sounded simple, but every 3 years they required their national league to put 1% more of revenue into youth soccer, starting at the lowest level with each new percent. So they went low instead of high. So instead of jamming it all into U20 teams, they jammed them into like U18s, U6s,
sure.
You know, and that
not,
just
I'm,
of course over 15 years
not talking
gave
about
all that institutional resources that you needed to build a program.
Sure. Okay. There are. I mean, I'm not, these are not excuses. Okay, but we have to recognize. I mean, you're using Belgium as an example, and it's extremely imperfect for a lot of reasons. The issues that face the United States, and again, these are not. This is not trying to say, well, this is just the way things are, and we should accept it. But the issues that face the United States are multi-layered. And when I say that the structures that are in place that impact the way we develop players, what I mean is pay to play. At the youth level, I'm not talking about MLS.
Absolutely,
and stuff. That stuff pre.
My kids play in all these leagues for years. You know, the PDAs and it's all basically you got to be a top 20 to 30% parent to afford any of this stuff and drive all around and fly all around in these stupid showcases.
Right.
And you know, and there's no system of play. I mean, my daughter's the only one that plays in college. She's not had two straight years of a consistent system of play. For the last 15 years, not 2 years. And I mean, that's insane.
Okay.
They go from 3-5-2 to 4-3-3 to 4-1-4-1. I mean, it's just like, it's literally like an institutional, showcase on how you don't coach.
Okay. I've got a bunch of people waiting and I want to get everybody
I'm
on
sure
the air.
You do.
No, it's okay. It's a great conversation. I think what we can agree on here is that there needs to be, obviously a mass reformation of American soccer. The problem, of course, is that this is a giant edifice that's not going to come down in one day. So we're talking, and again, one man can't do it. So we're talking about chipping away. If your assertion is that Jurgen Klinsmann has helping to chip away, I'm not convinced yet, but I'm willing to admit that the possibility is there.
And all I would say is I would rather we bring in more Klinsmans, you know, assuming he's just the first of many who, and they'll get all fired, but that's okay. And I think they're willing to get fired. I think there's this kind of global willing to help us. These people are a little weird. I'm not going to sit there and say that they're not and their behaviors aren't. I'm not going to defend them that way, but I think there's a pile of these kind of aged rock stars who love America, who love to help us. And we're willing to spend 5 or 10 years, obviously get paid well and get fired at the same time doing it and chip away. And I think we should just, in some ways, leverage them, you know, to come over here and help us do that.
I
don't think there's any other way of doing it.
Okay, fine. I'm okay with that, but I would like it to be fun at least. And therefore, I'm... then we need to.
Yeah, you know what? That is a great point.
Let's bring in Bielsa. Okay, let's just get this. Hire Marcelo Bielsa. Have some fun for a while. He'll go crazy. We'll all get frustrated with him, and then we'll move on and go to the next guy. Okay,
that's. I mean, if someone set up a PayPal account, I would put $10 in a month to get Bielsa.
There you go.
I just think he would just go ape. Every week on everybody, including players, coaches, media, you know, Gelati, just, you know, refs. I mean, we would become Olympic Marseille as a country, which just would be the most amazing experience for like a couple of years.
Aaron, I appreciate the call. Call back, all right? Another time. Let's have another discussion.
Thank you. I absolutely will.
All right. Thanks. There goes Aaron in Jersey. Good stuff from him. You guys are lining up. I apologize. Aaron, obviously knew his stuff. Good chat. Vince in Toronto, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason. How's it going?
Oh, hey, Vince. It's been a while. What's going on, man?
It's been a long while, yeah. I, like many others, saw the U.S.-Mexico game. I also saw the U-23s lose to Honduras. I just wanted to say this, and I told Trevor this when he asked me what I wanted to talk about. Just, I wanted to pull everybody, you know, back a bit away from the ledge. You know, I've seen already so many posts or so many Reddit post articles about how U.S. soccer, you know, is at a low point. How, my favorite one is how U.S. soccer hasn't grown since the 90s, which I just burst out laughing at that point. You guys want to really see despair and futility? You just have to look north a bit, and you'll truly get an idea of what it's like to be sad all the time and feel that your program isn't going anywhere. You know, Jason, I kill to have Canada lose an extra time to Mexico on Wonderful.
I know. Vince. I knew you were going to do this, okay? And it makes sense. You're Canadian. The frustration level is obviously much higher than it should be for the United States. We are moaning here while at the same time remaining one of the top two teams or top three teams in CONCACAF, very likely going to qualify for the World Cup still. All of these things, of course, okay? In relative terms, we've got nothing on Canada in terms of despair. But we're accustomed to our lifestyle, Vince. This is like when you have one of those divorces and the spouse says, "I need $1 million a month because I have a lifestyle I've become accustomed to." We're accustomed to our damn lifestyle, and Jurgen Klinsmann is damaging our lifestyle, Vince.
You know, yeah, and I agree with you in the fact that you know, the expectations are much different, of course. But you know, this idea that Klinsmann has poisoned U.S. soccer, I find it a bit laughable because I do believe maybe it's his time to go. I'm not exactly sure who would replace him, but and at the same time, the questions have
Marcelo
to be asked
of Bielsa.
Bielsa and the USSF. But I don't know. I just feel that it's a bit, you know, over dramatic at some point,
sure.
Especially with a lot of the writers. I'm not going to name names, but a lot of them have been adding fuel to the fire by saying that the U-23s have failed to qualify for the Olympics. That's not the case. They can still qualify,
but they
like to say that they haven't simply because it's harder, because it's easier for them to spin that anti-Klinsmann agenda.
Whoa, Jason, some of them already have those very strong
biases against Klinsmann.
Whoa, okay, look. While I admit there may be some people out there who have a bias against Klinsmann, I think, knowing a lot of the guys that you're obliquely referencing, these guys are taking stock. Now, look, being a professional soccer writer or somebody who covers sports day in and day out in general, especially when you're close to teams and players and you talk to these people and you see the behind the scenes, look, it's easy to become very, very cynical. I've seen people who are, yay, soccer's great, become the dourest, saddest, most hateful people about everything. Everything is terrible all the time because they're cynical.
You're talking to one right now.
Okay, but I don't know that there's some built-in. And look, I respect the hell out of Simon Evans. I like the guy. We've had him on the show a million times. But he's been lobbing bombs about xenophobia on Twitter recently that disgust me. Because this is not about Klinsmann being German. This is not about Klinsmann being foreign. This is about what we see in front of us and whether or not this is the right thing for the program. You may have a different opinion, but that doesn't mean that an opinion that Klinsmann is not succeeding or an opinion that Klinsmann is not doing a good enough job is necessarily anti-Klinsmann in terms of bias or xenophobic in terms of outlook. I mean, let's just take this for what it is. It's a guy who has had problems recently with this team. It's a fair assessment of Jurgen Klinsmann does not say he's successful. You can argue that he's a good thing for the future of the program, that he is building towards something. That's fine. That is absolutely fair. But don't sit here and act like because you're saying he lost some games, you know, we're wrong to say that it's. I don't know, Vince, I'm very frustrated by this, okay? Trevor's saying a lot of folks take every opportunity to take shots at Klinsmann. That's a function of the job. That's not a function of anti-Klinsmann or a function of xenophobia, okay? That's a function of following this team day in and day out, and because you do so, you become cynical, you fall into a rut of negativity. It's a lot easier to pick somebody apart than it is to build them up. And you know why? Because when you build somebody up, people always accuse you of being Pollyanna. They always accuse you of overstating everything, especially in soccer, especially in an environment where everybody is snobbish about their particular knowledge. Oh, you think the American... Alexi Lawless is on Twitter saying, I think this team, this group of players could compete with anybody in the world. And he gets berated for it. He's on the other side of it. Now, maybe he's anti-Klinsmann in some other way, but at least he's promoting the notion that American players are good enough, and everybody wants to shout you down. I mean, it's much easier. You get less heat if you say, well, we're not good enough, we'll never be good enough, our system is crap, everything is crap, 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 crap. That's just the easier path. And I think, and again, people fall into it, and maybe they should try harder not to, but that's just... I don't think they're bringing their biases about Klinsmann to the table. I think they're bringing their biases about it's just easier to be negative.
No, I suppose you're right. You are right. And, you know, the parallels between this and often the Canadian soccer writing is quite prevalent. But you are right, Jason, and the results haven't been there. I mean, you can argue, and I was one of the many who were yelling at my TV during the World Cup, wondering why is this team playing this way? After Klinsmann preached, you know, a proactive approach that the team would go toe-to-toe. Now he backtracks and say, oh, we're still working towards that. This is a guy who should have done much better at the Gold Cup, made questionable decisions, and paid for it. This is a guy who has not made friends with the media at all, with, you know, attacking them, insulting the intelligence of the American soccer fan on multiple occasions.
Look.
He's made it difficult on himself.
Yes.
Very much so. And I understand your frustration. Absolutely, Jason. But I just wanted to point out that not everything is bad.
No,
there's still a lot to be done. And we won't know what Klinsmann will have done for this program, you know, not for the long future, especially because he's not just the head coach. He's also the technical director. And so that's a whole nother thing. Even when he leaves the head coach position, what is his influence going to be at the top?
Yeah.
So there's a lot to unpack here. I do believe that his time as coach maybe is over. Mm-hmm. But Klinsmann's time as a cog in the U.S. machine isn't.
Yeah.
And I don't think it will be for a while. So people also need to accept that he's just not going to go and disappear. That's not enough. Neither is Sunil Gulati. So there's a lot there that needs to be processed and unpacked and understood, really, because, you know, you can't be negative, you know, going into World Cup qualifying. It doesn't make for a good situation for anybody.
Yeah, and you pointed out something that I think is crucial to this conversation, and that's that he hasn't made friends, he hasn't worked hard, he hasn't worked at all to, and he doesn't need to curry their favor necessarily, but he also, you know, he's gone the other direction. Again, as you said, he's insulted the soccer knowledge of pretty much every American. He's done some things that have maybe soured some people against him. And while in a perfect world, every journalist is completely down the middle, biased, views everything completely evenly, regardless of what that coach says, doesn't take that stuff personally. It's only human nature to sort of sit there and go, wait, are you really throwing things at me? Are you insulting me? How does a human being typically respond to insults? It's not by saying, oh, this guy's doing an okay job, we should give him time, let's continue to sit by and watch these results go in the negative direction, let's watch this team play poor soccer. No, it's the other thing. It's well, this isn't going well, and this is a guy who, and that's part of it too, is if he's going to continue to dig himself in and make himself an adversary, how else is he going to be treated?
No, yeah, I mean, and I can, you know, I follow the U.S. as much as I can, but of course Canada is my home and I follow them. And the parallels between Benito Floro and what's been happening recently with him and Jurgen Klinsmann is quite fascinating, Jason. And I'll just leave you with this. At the Gold Cup, Canada failed to score any goals. They only let in one goal against Jamaica, but they failed to score. They even failed to create any meaningful chances.
Yeah.
When Floro was questioned about this by a number of Canadian reporters, they asked him straight up, why is this team unable to score goals? They did not score any goals at all during this tournament. He retorts, well, we didn't give up any goals either. We just gave up one goal in the 90th minute and almost standoffish.
Yeah.
And after the Gold Cup, things have changed. And now the Canadian soccer media doesn't look at Benito Floro as some sort of savior of Canadian soccer. They look at a guy who perhaps his outdated tactics are starting to hurt the team more than help them. And it's fascinating to me how quickly things can change. After Landon Donovan was left off the World Cup roster, Jason, things changed very quickly for Jurgen Klinsmann that were only going to be fixed by results that haven't come.
Yeah. I mean, there's, as you said, there's a lot to unpack. Thanks for the call, Vince. I got to go. There's lots to unpack. It's all wrapped up in not only the performance of the team, the future of the team, the style of the team, but our psyche as a soccer country. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I'll admit that. I'll recognize here that perhaps my interpretation of the Jurgen Klinsmann era is built on my expectations as a national team fan, my desire to see them progress, and the issues that are how American soccer is still struggling to find itself. Roberto in Connecticut, we can shift subjects. What's up, man?
You can read my mind perfectly, can't you, Jason?
Well, I mean, I have a screener who helps me out, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to mention a bit before I go to my other subject and talk a little bit of U.S. soccer. I was speaking to my dad about the game, and he just said, based straight up, that, oh, the players are looking off the pace and everything, that they need new players to incorporate the new side heading into the new cycle of World Cup qualifiers. And then I asked him, what about the new coach? He's like, listen, if we're going to bring in a foreign coach, we need to bring in a foreign coach that actually speaks English and can understand and the American fans and the American public.
Well, there's nobody who's going to be closer to that than Jurgen Klinsmann. I mean, let's give the guy credit. He's been living here. He's been living here for 20 years. He speaks English. Maybe he doesn't speak intuitive English because he is native German speaker, but he speaks good enough. I mean, there's no issues with him relating. I don't think there's an issue with him relating.
Exactly.
And I don't buy the notion that he, you know, I talked to Matt Doyle yesterday on the Sirius show, on the Sirius XM show, and Matt said something about he would prefer we go back to a local guy who understands the American player a little bit better. And maybe there is a gap there. I don't know. But I don't think that's what's preventing Jurgen Klinsmann from doing the job that he's been hired to do. I don't think that's it.
No. Absolutely. It's a much more complicated situation that we would go on for hours and hours and hours, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what else did you want to talk about, Roberto?
I was just wondering, how much did you know about the World Cup qualifiers today in South America?
I forgot to put those on the news, and I apologize for that, but we've got five of them, right?
It's so fine, don't worry.
Haven't looked at the table. We're only, what, one game in?
Yeah.
So it's super early. We know what Argentina and Brazil lost in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
We've got. I mean, Chile's still riding high off their Copa America win. So they beat Brazil 2-0. That game was at home. The Argentines losing at home themselves actually to Ecuador. So now you have five games today for the second round. What are you looking at? I mean, Brazil hosting Venezuela, that should be a walk for Brazil. And yet, you know, lots of doubts creeping in.
But it could not be as well, because you never know what could happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I imagine the Venezuelans are going to bunker. They're going to sit back. They're going to try to absorb pressure. And if Brazil can't break them down, and that's been one of Brazil's issues, ongoing issues for a while now, is that dynamism in the attack. And no Neymar. Right? Is he still out? Is he still suspended?
Yeah, he's out.
So they still have to deal with that issue. You've got Argentina away to Paraguay. That can't be easy.
No, absolutely. And you look at that. I don't know if you have the other games for the following match days.
Yes.
Look at that schedule. Now imagine if they don't pick up points tonight, and look at the remaining two games that they have, or even the next three games that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got Argentina away to Paraguay and Brazil home to Venezuela, and then they play each other in Buenos Aires in the second week of November. That could be massive. And you know, look, as much as it's about Argentina and Brazil not getting points, it's about everybody else too. So right now, your winners in the first round: Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, Uruguay, and Paraguay. The question is whether or not those teams, especially with Argentina and Brazil not getting points, are going to continue. I mean, this is all going to work itself out eventually. They're going to have some back and forth. But you have to have, you know, you have to have five teams that can maintain momentum enough to keep Argentina or Brazil from catching them, because they're going to get points eventually, Roberto.
Absolutely. But that's the beauty of it. You know, there is no more easy game. There is no more easy home games, for that matter, because you look at the teams in South America, the strength and depth has never been higher.
Yeah,
than it ever has.
Yeah, I think. I mean, if you were going to pull, if you're going to throw up the, I mean, Peru and Bolivia, the only teams you can really maybe look past a little bit. But even then, you know, you play away to those teams, and you're probably going to have a tough day of it.
Unless you pick up points in the altitude in Bolivia, mm-hmm. then you are pretty much in a good place.
Yeah,
as long as you win the remaining home games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be fascinating. Again, I come to the issue of television. Any of these games on TV today?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's on the same day. It's the same time as U.S. Costa Rica. Which actually, I have one more question about this. Do you think they're going to sell out today?
No. In fact, Mark Fishkin from Seeing Red, a guy who is at Red Bull Arena every chance he gets, says that he thinks there'll be 10,000 people there today.
Oh wow! Yeah, I'm not surprised. I assume that.
Yeah, lots of. Right. It's the disappointment after. Thanks for the call, Roberto. It's a disappointment after losing to Mexico. Clearly, it's a friendly following a meaningful game. It was always going to be a massive letdown, regardless if the United States lost or won against Mexico on Saturday. I don't know anything about how Costa Rica is coming into this game. I don't know what they're trying to get out of it. I don't even know if I'm. I mean. It's a friendly, try to toss these things out. But of course, knowing how we will react tomorrow, we'll either have something positive to point to and hopefully build upon and say, hey, you know, Klinsmann at least got this group. He made 8 changes. He sent home 8 guys, 9 guys, and brought in 5. But hopefully he'll be able to cobble something together that can be a notion of positivity going into World Cup qualifying, because that starts November 13th or second week of November. I can't remember which day of the week they start on. But it starts the second week of November. That's not that far away. That's a month away. So they need something. And then you have, the possibility of losing or not playing well, and then tomorrow we're all back where we were today, or we were yesterday. Down on this team, down on the fortunes of this team, looking for reasons to believe. Here's a couple of things on Twitter. Aaron's asking if Klinsmann has lost the team. I don't know that Klinsmann's lost the team because I'm not in the locker room. I'm not going to presume. But I don't think it's good to call out one of your best players in public for begging off in the match against Mexico. Again, Fabian Johnson probably shouldn't be asking off in that game. He probably shouldn't be. If he had nothing left and he was hurting the team, you could actually reason yourself into, well, he did the right thing. But if you're a competitive player, if you want to win that game, if you're giving everything you got, you probably don't beg off. He was coming off an injury, by the way. This is something to consider. And players should be cognizant of what of their bodies and how far they can push themselves before things fall apart. But for Klinsmann to go directly to the press and say things like, I had a severe word with him, and I sent him home, and he can rethink his approach. I don't know. I mean, clearly this is not something he did lightly. You are calculating this decision. You are thinking, well, I want to make this statement publicly to send a message to everybody else. And the question then, and why Aaron's asking, is, how does the rest of the team respond? Do they take this as, wow, he's really holding us accountable. We better bust our asses. We better really work hard, or he's going to have something to say about it. He's got the stick out. This isn't the carrot. This is the stick. Or do they say, you know what? What? Enough of this guy. We bust our asses anyway, and he still goes out in public and shames us in front of everybody. I mean, again, I don't know either way. I don't know that one's more likely than the other right now, to be honest with you. And Kyle's pointing out that tonight's attendance might be related to the Mets are playing in the NLCS. Yeah, sure, that's part of it. Yeah, Mets NLCS versus USA Costa Rica in a friendly. I could see the Mets winning out there, much to producer Trevor's chagrin. 646-832-3909. That's your phone number. Just a couple of other news items that I saw this morning I should probably address on some level. Atlanta is going to have their academy start in 2016. This is 2 years, I believe, 2 years ahead of the launch of the team. Are they starting 2017? 2017, so it's a year ahead. The story up over at Soccer by Ivis from Ivis Gullerstep. That's SBIsoccer.com. Major League Soccer's next expansion team is still more than a year and a half away from kicking off. We know the team's name, but its first head coach and first signing are still some ways away. But we do know that they will announce plans to launch a full youth academy starting in the fall of 2016. 5 age groups joining U.S. Soccer's Development Academy, the nation's premier setup, which of course is that U.S. Soccer setup. It goes all the way back to what we were talking about with Aaron when he called in. We're bringing in everybody earlier than we have to based on the MLS timetable because you want to get them comfortable with the market and understanding what's going on here, said Arthur Blank. Listening to everybody and getting a good sense of the soccer fabric in Atlanta. We'll do whatever we have to do to make sure it's first class and world class. We're equally excited about the youth part of this as we are about playing professionally, which is all great stuff from Arthur Blank. I mean, this is the owner of the team. This isn't Carlos Bocanegra, who's the technical director. This isn't the president, Darren Eels. This is the owner who's saying things about being as excited for the youth setup of Atlanta United as they are for the professional team, and that's good stuff. I mean, we could be cynical and doubt his commitment, but I don't think there's any reason to. We got to take Arthur Blank at face value right now. And everything that Atlanta has done so far has been a home run. Okay, minus the stadium situation, playing on a football field with turf, whatever. Okay, whatever. We're going to have to push that one aside. But everything else has been a home run. And in fact, as a writer to this story, reports are out that they have sold 26,000 season tickets. Or, let me make sure, season ticket deposits are at 26,000. So they haven't sold 26,000 season tickets, but they've taken deposits on 26,000 season tickets. Again, year and a half away from actually starting. And they've gotten that many people to at least put money down on the idea of buying season tickets. That's big success. Darren Eels says Atlanta United up to 26,000 season ticket deposits. Now, if they got every single one of those to turn into a season ticket, and they got every single one of those people in the building for their games, then I think that's probably what? Second in the league in attendance, or third in the league in attendance right off the bat with NYCFC. Because Orlando City is going to move into their new stadium eventually. It's going to bring down their average attendance. I don't know what the capacity of the Orlando stadium is going to be, but I don't think it's going to be more than 25. I know they've expanded it from their original plans, but it's not going to be more than 25. So that could be huge for Atlanta. I don't know what the lower bowl capacity, right? Because they're doing the drape thing like Vancouver. They're bringing down the tarps or whatever to give it a more intimate atmosphere for soccer at the Atlanta NFL Stadium, the new one. Also, this is related to Atlanta as well. Nice little segue here. Former Atlanta Silverbacks player Kwadwo Poku called up to the Ghanaian national team. They're playing Canada today, as a matter of fact. I think that game's in D.C., right? Is that game like RFK? Kwadwo Poku, one of my favorite players. Now, Kwadwo Poku is not the finished product. He's got a long way to go before he is a consistent enough player that we're talking about him as a best 11 in MLS or even a potential sale to another league or whatever. I mean, he's got a ton of talent, though. That's pretty obvious. Defensively, has some issues. Not quite the player he should be there. But to see him called up for Ghana is a little bittersweet for a couple of reasons. Well, for one reason, really, and that's that he has expressed interest in getting his citizenship and playing for the U.S. He's been here a while. His career started here. His professional career started here. He got his opportunity to go play for NYCFC because of his experience with the Atlanta Silverbacks. He loves the United States and has said that he wants to play for the United States. But Ghana has the opportunity to call him up now because he's eligible for them. He's not eligible for the U.S. right now. I don't believe this is going to cap tie him. So how does that work? I always get confused with these rules. If it's a friendly, it doesn't necessarily cap tie him, but if he's not eligible for the U.S., can he still, when he does get eligible, can he switch? I don't know how this works. I can't remember. And the other thing about Poku and what he represents as a player that could one day be eligible for the U.S., we have a fascination as American soccer fans with the guy who is either the dual international or waiting to make a decision or a guy who's going to get a citizenship and we're waiting on him. We get a little too excited about these players sometimes. We put a lot more into them than they might be worth, and certainly Darlington Nagbe comes to mind, a player who, while immensely talented, hasn't necessarily progressed in the way that we wanted him to, or a lot of people hoped he would for the Portland Timbers. And I believe he's now eligible. And so we'll see if he gets a call up in January. That'd be great if he gets a call up, and I would love to see him get an opportunity, but let's not make him into a savior. The same thing with Poku or anybody else for that matter who's in that area. Getting overly excited about the potential to contribute to the team. All right. 646-832-3909. Lloyd Sam also playing for Ghana. That's right. Mark Fishkin reminded me of that. Lloyd Sam, English-born, but eligible for Ghana. So he will be playing for the Black Stars as well. And look, it's a friendly against Canada. This isn't Ghana's best team by any stretch of the imagination, but clearly it's a great honor and an excellent opportunity for these guys to go play for the Ghanaian national team. Kyle on Twitter, random question, anything on Beckham's Miami team? Haven't heard anything about the team in quite some time. Again, if you missed the beginning of the show, I did have an update on Beckham United Miami FC as related from the Daily Star. Daily Star's got to be a rag, right? Like, pretty much, yeah, it's definitely a rag. World exclusive, David Beckham, my plan to recreate Man United in the USA. Which I don't think he actually said. I don't think he actually said that. We want the club to be run professionally. Everything needs to be run like a club like Manchester United. You have to look at it like that. Luckily, I've had a little bit of experience in that, and I will be a demanding owner. Ooh. I want the team to be successful and the club to be successful, so I think I have to be demanding. I definitely won't get involved in the team decisions, though, the way players are playing and things like that. I don't, you know, sometimes you don't know if the quotes coming out of an English tabloid are legitimate or not. Quite often you'll see a story, oh, this guy said this thing, and then he refutes it a couple of days later. It says, this is a direct quote from this story. The hairdryer? Well, I've seen it enough times, and I know how it works on the positive side of things. We'll see. But I'm not going to manage or coach. I won't get involved in any of that. I will just be the owner. All right. I don't know what the hairdryer, what? Okay. I know what it relates, what the reference is, but why did this come up? And what does he mean by, I've seen it enough times, I know how it works on the positive side of things? The throwing of the hairdryer. Okay. But here's the bit. Here's the important thing. It's been a long process, and I didn't think it would be as difficult as it has been, but dealing with the political side of things in Miami has been a lot more difficult. But we found a site where we want the stadium, and we have to build it before we can come into the league. Our aim is 2018, but trying to build a team is something I've dreamed of since being a kid. He goes on and talks about being 12 years old, sitting around with his mates, talking about owning a team. There have been a few speed bumps along the way, but I believe we are closer now than we ever have been. Hopefully in the next 6 weeks we'll be able to announce the site of the stadium plans, and then we'll move on. It's really exciting. I myself was just in Miami last weekend. Last week. Wednesday, Thursday, some of Friday. Got to see drove by the site that will likely be the home of the team that's near the Miami Marlins Stadium. Saw the slip that was potentially going to be a site next to American Airlines Arena, I believe is what the Heat play. There's a slip there. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It's an inlet sort of situation, man-made, that they were talking about filling in and putting the soccer stadium there. It would have been brilliant. Let me just say that. It would have been amazing. Also saw the original planned location on Dodge Island, which is right port of Miami, where the cruise ships leave out of Miami. The backdrop for that stadium would have been insane. I feel a little disappointed they haven't gotten there. But if they get a site, man, Miami's got so many questions about it. Let's hope it works if they get it done. Vlad in New York, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, actually, in Miami, that's also pretty central. So I think you get a lot of, the millennials coming in, as opposed to, I think, what is it, the Dolphins and the Marlins and all those teams out in the suburbs who have really bad attendance numbers.
Okay. What else?
So I also wanted to call about, I guess, I'm not a big U.S. fan, but I'm frustrated in seeing kind of how it seems that Clinton and U.S. soccer, you know, treat the fans in the United States. And it relates, I think, as well to kind of the attitude that it seems that FIFA is also taking towards, you know, fans and players and people to which, you know, they do not really have any accountability. And it's frustrating to see it because it's a strain that you see throughout soccer, but also throughout sports, where these people have no, their metrics does not include any kind of transparency or accountability of the fans. And you can see the mentality that kind of permeates through all of these institutions, and it's the same strain. And it just kind of shows you how kind of, I guess, ingrained it is.
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily want to equate FIFA's attitude to U.S. soccer, although there are certainly questions about U.S. soccer, their involvement or lack of disclosure on some of the things that happened within the CONCACAF region in terms of all
right,
of this.
I'm sorry, I'm not speaking specifically towards, you know, fraud or corruption.
No, I know. You're talking in general. But when it relates to the national team, Vlad, when we talk about, you know, what accountability U.S. soccer has to the fan who supports this team, I mean, it's very much the same thing as any team has accountability towards their fans. You are supposed to be putting a winner out there. That's what the fans want. They want to win games, right? Generally speaking, if you win, nothing else matters. Soccer's a little different because we get into style of play and how you play, et cetera, et cetera. And that sort of becomes bigger than it would be in any other sport. But I think that you certainly can't have an organization that is responding to the whim of fans at all times. It's just, you have to strike a balance. How do you find a balance where you are responsive to the fans, but you're also giving yourself the leeway to make difficult decisions? I mean, somebody's got to decide who the coach is and what direction the program is going. It's not like you could take a referendum. Hey, everybody, vote on what you want U.S. soccer to do. That's not really how it works.
No, definitely. And as a Red Bull fan, and, you know, everything that the team's gone through in the last year, which is, I mean, pretty fascinating, because in, you know, I think what, January or February, you have a town hall meeting where, I mean, just the vitriol coming from the fans was immense. And I don't know what, you know, if you had a similar town hall for U.S. soccer fans, I don't know how that would be, you know, if that would be somewhat similar. But what was interesting was that the Red Bull organization did not provide concrete answers in terms of their approach going forward, why Pat G was fired. But the difference, though, is that then they've had an amazing season. They didn't really have a transparent approach to the fan base, but the results showed on the field. And I mean, I would have to say, you know, as a season hit holder over the course of the year, I have a lot of faith in them suddenly. But you don't see that necessarily in U.S. soccer. And
yeah,
I think that is an issue as well, because there's more of a long-term development focus. But it's just interesting to kind of see that there has to be a payoff at some point, or the fans are going to, I mean, I don't know what, you know, Red Bull's condition would be if the, you know, if they hadn't played well this year because of weird decisions and no answers.
It's, man, that's fascinating. That is, it's fast. Again, there's got to be somebody making tough decisions. You know, the difference with Red Bull is, of course, Ali Curtis came in and he made those decisions. He was the ultimate authority there, and he was brand new on the scene. And some of the vitriol was directed to him because he was brand new, because nobody knew exactly what he was going to do. U.S. soccer, you've got entrenched leadership, right? Sunil Gulati reelected again in 2014 for another 4-year term. I don't know if he ran unopposed this time around, but he's run unopposed before. I wouldn't be surprised. He's got the backing of the people that matter, which means that ultimately, you know, and he's been around. So he's been around through good times, bad times, and we are now questioning whether or not he's making the right decisions. I don't know. Again, I do think that I do think that we should also be paying attention to his role in all of the FIFA elements as well, and U.S. soccer's decision to back Sepp Blatter previously. You know, there are a lot of questions about U.S. soccer and its leadership that should be asked. You know, but what most people care about is winning and losing. So that's where the focus is going to be.
Right. But there also needs to be the impetus for these people to feel that they have to answer to someone. And I don't know what the mechanism is for that.
Yeah. Again, it's somebody running against Sunil Gulati that that can gather the votes up. And the problem with these institutions, and definitely one of the problems with U.S. soccer and then all the way up to CONCACAF and then FIFA, is that these people become entrenched. They curry the favor of the people who make the decisions. Those people are never, there's no term limits. Those people are never ousted. They're always there. They're always, it becomes this repeating cycle over and over again. So why Sepp Blatter continued to maintain support, because it didn't matter if couple of countries weren't happy with him. It didn't matter if there were a couple of people calling him out for his leadership of an organization that was rife with corruption. The people that did matter, the people that amounted to the number of votes he needed to stay in power, were never going to go away.
Right. And even in terms of, you know, what the ethics committee has done recently, I mean, is it the sponsors, you know, is it a lot of the backroom conversations going on, the sponsors, you know, the last couple of weeks before Platini and Blatter went down? I mean, there was, you kind of wonder, like, what is the domino? What's the domino? What's the domino for U.S. soccer? You know, what's the domino for FIFA? What really, truly brings change? And, like, everyone still seems very insulated. But 90 days, that's not much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with two different things here, obviously. Thanks for the call, Vlad. The U.S. soccer stuff, again, if you are frustrated with the leadership of U.S. soccer, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it's almost got to rise to the level of being a consistent, and this is comes back to the issue of pressure. No pressure on Jurgen Klinsmann, but also no pressure on Sunil Gulati. And because of that, Sunil Gulati can operate with impunity and give Jurgen Klinsmann the freedom, you know, the job security that takes the, whatever. These things are obviously feeding each other. Bill in New York, you're on the air.
Jason, yeah, sorry, I haven't been listening to the show, so I'm not sure if you're done with the topic, but I just had to throw it out there before the Costa Rica game tonight that I'm going to. The players got to look at themselves after that Mexico game, and they sucked. And I know you hate the saying, but they made Mexico look like a world-class team.
Okay.
The players didn't play. And the Jamaica game made me sick last year because the elitist attitude that all players had coming onto that field saying, that's a third place game. We don't need to play for this. We only play for first place. We stink. Who the hell do we not go out there and give 100% every single game? Mm-hmm. And tonight, they better come out and give 100% to this game tonight. If these players come walking out there and, oh, we don't care, we just lost to Mexico, this Costa Rica game doesn't mean anything, it's only a friendly. Well, we're the fans, we're there, we're going to be there rooting the eye. You better come out and give 100% tonight.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I think that's a... It's a fair thing. I mean, you know, if we're going to draw it out, it's going to be about whether it's a player problem and you need to change out the players. And I brought this up. Is it time to say goodbye to Clint Dempsey? I'm not talking about after the fourth round of qualifying. I'm not talking about 2017. I'm talking about right now. Is it time to say goodbye to Clint Dempsey? Is it time to say, all right, Jose Yator, you've had too many chances. I know you're 25. You should be in the prime of your career, but you've had enough chances. We're not buying what you're selling anymore. Is it time to say, is it time to move on from a certain group of players who maybe do feel as though they don't have to put forth that effort, do feel comfortable in their position in the team? And then, you know, bringing that to even a wider perspective, the coach's job is to put together a team that is going to go out and put forth 100%, Bill. And maybe Klinsmann has failed in that regard, and we need to give him an opportunity to figure out who those guys are. And he really needs, rather than pressure to win games, we'll just say, screw it. Do whatever you need to do. If we have to suffer through some bad results, now qualifying's coming up, we can't mess with that too much, but if we have to suffer through some bad results so that you can bring in guys who actually are going to give 100%, we'd rather, I think this is probably true across the board. Bill, you're definitely expressing it here. We'd rather have a bunch of guys who play 100% but aren't big names or aren't even getting minutes with their club teams than have stars who are out there not putting forth the effort.
100%. I mean, that's the one thing we love about the Red Bull team this year is the stars aren't there and we have guys out there that are working. And I know everybody's talking about Klinsmann's job being on the line. I hope these players realize that their job is on the line. That these guys, if they don't come out and give 100%, they're gone. And I think they all feel this. They know that we're all Klinsmann. And I think they're getting a pass now and that these guys aren't coming out giving 100%. Deuce didn't give 100% in that Mexico game. I don't care what anybody says. He didn't play 100%. I was watching him closely during that game, and he wasn't busting it out there. Like, no. Bradley was. Bradley gave 100%, and I'll give him all the credit in the world for that game because how hard he was working. But some of these other guys weren't.
No.
And they better bring it tonight. Like I said, this is a game that these guys are saying, it doesn't mean anything. And I could see guys coming out there walking around on this on the field tonight. And they better not do it. They better realize that their job is on the line as well as Quincy.
Absolutely. Bill, that's a good place to end. Thanks for the call, man. Good stuff. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the game for whatever it's worth.
I definitely will.
All right, there goes Bill in New York. All right, that's a good place to wrap up this edition of Soccer Morning. Thank you to everybody who called in. Vince, Aaron, Bill, Vlad. Did I miss somebody else? I think that's it. Make sure you're checking out worldsoccertalk.com for all the stuff going on there. Follow us on Twitter, Soccer Morning. That's where you can get us. Lots of people talking about this town hall idea that Vlad threw out. Steve Brisnadine from Kansas City. With JK, with Klinsmann there to address the uneducated masses. Gulati there to explain why Klinsmann is unfireable. Never happened. No, probably not. But it's a fun idea. And Nick actually says no, for the sake of sanity, no. Could be fun. Could be fun, guys. I mean, you know, could live for those moments. All right, that's going to do it. Good stuff. Be back tomorrow. We'll talk USA Costa Rica, whatever that game brings us. We'll talk about the future of this team. U17 starting on Friday in the World Cup down in Chile. Lots to talk about, world of soccer. See you then. Bye.
Did my invitations disappear? What I put my heart on every curse.